This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Of course, ideas matter, but let's talk to a Nobel laureate who showed that ideas are quantifiable and can be put into calculations, showing how technological bright ideas boost the economy or fix the environment. That used to seem crazy to many other economists who tend to focus more on concrete things such as widgets coming out of factories, not seemingly mushy things like ideas. Dr. Paul Romer chews on all sorts of interesting matters, such as the difference between blind optimism, i.e. things will be fine, you'll magically have enough money for retirement, versus what is called conditional optimism. Retirement will be fine if we have a savings plan. Romer's an economist at New York University's Stern School of Business. The other day, he got the news that he was one of two winners of the Nobel Prize in Economics. Dr. Romer, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
And congratulations on the prize.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a surprise.
You often address things that governments can do to boost, you know, technological innovation, spend money on research, create intellectual property laws that I think reward innovation but don't go too far. How would you say we're doing here in 2018 on those two counts?
I think instead of just focusing on stepping on the gas, we need to think about steering. The economy is this huge innovation discovery machine. What the government can do usefully is to focus some of that effort where things turn out better for everyone. So, that we could probably do with a little more innovation total. But right now, the real challenge is to steer it in the right direction.
It's to figure out what we'd like to see in some outcomes and what use public policy to guide it.
Yeah. So I could give you an example. Fracking is an amazing instance of discovery of many things that come together to make it much cheaper to extract oil and gas. In a world where burning oil and gas puts more and more carbon into the atmosphere, it's not actually the most important kind of innovation to have. It's actually got some real negative side effects. If that same innovation was an effort was devoted to photovoltaics, we'd continue these price falls we've seen in, you know, in solar power. But right now, the big challenge is to find better ways to store these variable sources like solar and wind.
But what leads to that? I mean, government writing checks for basic research?
What you want to do is create some incentives for solving the problem, which is basically we want low-cost, low-carbon energy. And then let the market, let all the individuals, let academics all search around and figure out what's the best way to do that. And then to create those incentives, there are things like, for example, the expectation of taxes in the future on energy sources that emit carbon.
I mean, since you won the prize the other day, I've been trying to catch up and read up on what you call conditional optimism. I'm trying to understand it better. This isn't just rose-colored glasses, aw shucks, technology progresses, be patient, a lot of this gets worked out. Can you give me a sense of what the nature of the conditional optimism is?
Let me give you another context. If you think about the fears people had a century ago about mechanization and the way this was going to destroy jobs, the complacent attitude would have been to say, it'll all work itself out. Everybody will be fine. That would have been the wrong attitude. What we had was this sense of we've got to do the right thing. In the 20th century, there was a high school movement that said we've got to get everybody up to the level of high school education to be able to do the new kinds of jobs that are coming. So if conditional on doing the right thing, in that case, a big investment in education, everything can turn out better for everybody. But if you just are complacent and say, it'll work itself out, you're not going to be happy with the outcome.
You know, it's funny you should mention that historical example. A crucial story we continue to follow here is what technology will do for, but also do to, the labor force. And with artificial intelligence, automation, robots are entering, you know, everyone says, a highly disruptive period. But I do talk to people who say, don't worry about it as a matter of policy. It's worked itself out in the past. Does your notion of conditional optimism help us with what tech will do to the workforce this time around?
Absolutely. And there's a cautionary message here because people can look at the past and say, hey, you know, the 20th century turned out fine, so there's no problem. It turned out fine because we did things to make sure it turned out fine. And so there's no basis for complacency in the success record that we can see when we look back. There are new things we need to do in the labor market, in education, and in thinking about the future of energy sources. As long as we do those things, everything really can turn out fine. But if we don't do them, we're going to be disappointed.
the labor force, but also one thinks of the challenge of climate change. It'll just all work out. I'm sure technology will come save us. That's not what you're arguing.
Yeah, but there's way to take this amazingly powerful innovation machine. It's a global innovation machine now. All we got to do is just point it at the most important problems we face, and everybody can be better off. And, you know, so I'm not happy with the people who are saying, don't worry, it'll solve itself. They're wrong. But I'm also very critical of the people who say, well, the solution means we all got to go back to living in caves and, you know, we got to give up modern lifestyles. That's just false. We can all have the kind of quality of life we want as long as we keep harnessing innovation to make life better for all of us.
And by the way, as a political matter, you think the pitch should be on policies leading to technology that make life better, not focusing on the dire scenarios?
Well, I think you can focus it in a sense that it would be incredibly valuable for everybody on Earth if we had some better options for usable energy for consumers and businesses that doesn't keep adding more and more carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. So we want to think about a way to encourage innovation in that direction. And then more broadly, we want to keep encouraging the range of possible innovations that can just provide new opportunities for people and make sure that those opportunities are available to everyone. So there's a broad agenda, but a more focused one on climate change. And you know, if you look back at the ozone hole, before we attacked the ozone hole, people were saying this is going to be so disruptive if we can't use chlorofluorocarbons to spray on our underarm deodorant. You know, this will be the end of life as we know it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they banned the chlorofluorocarbons. And son of a gun, it turns out stick deodorant works okay. So, you know, the anticipation, especially from people who don't want to change, oh, it's going to be terrible. It's just always those projections of doom are always off, and things can turn out much better.
Now, many of our listeners will know that your dad, Roy Romer, was the governor of Colorado for more than a decade. You probably have a pretty good sense of how politicians tick. But help me understand this. You don't think that economists like yourself should be out there actually lobbying for the policies that they believe in?
One of the most powerful insights in economics is this idea of a division of labor. You do the thing you're good at. Other people do something else that they're good at. The net effect is better for everybody. So there's a process that involves a kind of political entrepreneurship where, you know, someone like my dad or any other politician builds coalitions. They try to make a case for some kind of decision. That's something that I could see he was very good at, but I didn't want to compete with him because he was so good at it, so I wanted to go off and do something else. What we can do as economists and scientists more generally is say, we'll give you the facts. We're not going to join the fight between the different sides. That's got to play out, but all sides will be better off if you start from an accurate sense of what's true. And our job is to be the ones who can say, here's what we know, and here's some things that you could try, but you ultimately are the ones who make the decision.
But how far should we go with it? I mean, it's not that you would argue that economists don't have a point of view. I mean, there's certain flavors of economics, and it's not that you're a complete unbiased referee on the side.
I actually think that's what we should be, is the referees. As a person, I vote. You know, I participate in that political process. But when I went to the World Bank, it was just after the Brexit vote, and to a large extent, the Brexit vote was a bunch of people in Britain saying, if the economists are for it, we're against it. And so I thought this was a huge warning sign to economists that if we overstep and try to say, well, not only here's what the facts are, but here's what you really should do. And if you don't believe what we believe, you're a bad person. This was a huge mistake, and it jeopardizes our legitimacy and our authority. So I think the key to the job we can do is to make sure that we can consistently and accurately say that we're objective. We're not taking sides. We're going to provide the facts, and then others are the ones who actually have to resolve what the society actually does.
And before we go, Dr. Romer, at UC Berkeley, when they win a Nobel Prize, they get an assigned parking spot. Did NYU give you anything?
Well, let's just say we're in negotiations right now.
All right. There you go.
You know the story about Berkeley? I was a faculty member there. Berkeley, this is true of all universities. It's a large collection of free agents who are unified by a common grievance about parking. So.
Paul Romer, professor of economics at New York University's Stern School of Business and winner of this year's Nobel Prize in Economics. Dr. Romer, thank you.
Thank you.